This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're listening. You're listening with me, Roshan Kanitson, and Wong Xiaoning in studio.
You forgot where you were for a moment, Roshan.
Yes, in a moment of absent-mindedness, I guess. But in about 10 minutes, we'll be revisiting the conversation we had earlier with Faisal Aziz, president of ABIM, on the upcoming Dong Zong gathering. But before that, Xiaoning, let's talk about this year's biggest environmental and climate stories. As we head into a new decade, much can be said about how our environment fared through the 2010s. This year saw millions of people around the world mobilized in protests to highlight the dire emergency facing our planet. Could 2019 prove to be the year when talk finally turns to action on the climate crisis?
Yeah, let's have a look back at some of the biggest climate stories of the year. And of course, one of them is none other than Greta Thunberg. The climate strike movement exploded this year on the back of her actions. Now, millions took part in mass protests during the course of the year in countries as diverse as Australia, Uganda, Colombia, Japan, Germany, and even the UK. Now, she chose to make a statement when she sailed rather than flew to a UN climate meeting in New York. And here's a snippet of her statement.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words, and yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
And that was activist Greta Thunberg. And some very powerful words there. And I think what she's saying is not wrong. You know, there are people who are suffering because of the climate change that we're facing. We look at the wildfires down under, just how rampant they've been, or the Amazon rainforest fire itself. Or even close to home, that's more man-made, fires in Indonesia, the transboundary haze issues. But nevertheless, these are all climate and environmental issues that are just ongoing.
Yeah, and doesn't seem to be resolving anytime soon. If anything, just seems to get worse and worse with each year. Like if we talk about the Australian wildfires, I think it has always happened. Let's be frank about that. It's just that it seems to start even earlier than before. In the past, it used to start December and then go on sometime in January, February. But this time it started even as early as November. And the fire intensity is shocking. I mean, that's one big question that, you know, definitely we have a part to play in this, right? Why do the fires start so early nowadays?
And then not to forget that earlier this year in California, there was also a massive fires that burnt down houses. Many people lost their homes. And, you know, they're one of the parts there where she was talking about how people are looking to younger people for hope. And that's what Greta Thunberg is. She's a symbol of hope in the sense that maybe something can be done about it. But she's saying, how dare you look at me as a source of hope? But she has become. I mean, we've seen climate strikes across the world. People are standing up for this and protesting following her lead in this.
Yeah, and it's also something that I think even has been discussed by people like even Jane Goodall, right? And in The Breakfast Grill, she told us that we all need to play a role and that we shouldn't just give up hope, right? Because if basically everyone makes a decision to make that little bit of change, there will be a change in the climate, in the environment, our attitudes also will change, and corporates in turn will also change.
Yeah, and that grill was actually very good because it was talking about hope, and we cannot lose hope no matter what. Because the minute we start believing that there's no way of changing things, we will then stop entirely, because it, then people are just going to be, what's the point? But there is hope. We still need to do whatever it is we can, whether on the ground, change the consumer behavior. And then you eventually may change the corporate behavior, because they're catering to a whole different market there. But, you know, where hope gets snuffed out a little bit is when we saw President Donald Trump formally exit the Paris Climate Agreement, making the US the only country in the world that will not participate in the pact, as global temperatures are set to rise 3 degrees Celsius and worsening extreme weather will drive more and more people into poverty. That wasn't a great sign, especially considering how big and how powerful the US is.
Yeah, I mean, he believes Trump, President Trump believes that the agreement is unfair and to the US economy. It imposes an unfair economic burden on American workers, businesses and taxpayers, and that the US has already reduced its heat-trapping emissions. Now, in the Paris Agreement, the US had originally agreed to cut its heat-trapping pollution at least 26% below 2005 levels by 2025. Now, this hasn't stopped, fortunately. A dozen other countries also pursuing their net zero emissions by 2050. But unfortunately, they only represent 11% of the world's climate footprint, because the world's biggest emitters of pollution are still China, US and India.
And these are countries with vast populations that really need to, they need to change in order for us to really make a big impact here. But, you know, coming closer to home, and I guess a realization of the harsh reality of our impact on nature is when it was announced that the last Sumatran rhino in Malaysia died. I think the rhino's name was Tom. And the species is now all but extinct, with just 80 Sumatran rhinos left scattered across Kalimantan in Indonesia. And the National Geographic blamed the loss of habitat on humans moving into appropriate land for agriculture and building, in addition to years and years of poaching. And Tom was discovered poking around an oil palm plantation in 2008. That's about 12 years ago.
Yeah, because of our own need to grow, I mean, to have agriculture, right? We have also encroached into the natural habitat of animals. It's always going to be a challenge, I think, that humans and wildlife coexist together, because we still have issues about, you know, small stakeholders wanting to make a living. And I think we can't deny that. But how do we coexist peacefully, you know, is I think an ongoing question that it's not going to be easily resolved.
How do we establish that balance between the need for us to sustain ourselves and the balance that the environment requires? Because on one side, the American dream has led to this sense of materialism and consumption that has driven the world in one direction. And maybe we need to maybe undercorrect a little bit and come back. Right, that's why you're seeing a lot of zero waste movements and minimalism and
circular economy.
Because back home, my mother is a very strong proponent of this. And if I bring back a plastic bottle, I'm going to get a stare, at the very least. But it goes to show that we have to change the consumer behavior on the ground. And as we were talking earlier, Shaning, one of the most heartbreaking parts of the climate crisis has been the fires that have destroyed so much of the planet this year. And not just concentrated in one place, across the globe. Many acres of rainforest in the Amazon were found to be burned. In Indonesia, lands have been burned down for agriculture. And in Australia, we've got the wildfires that are just going around. And as I mentioned earlier, even in America, the California wildfires.
Yeah, and even here recently, earlier this year in March, I mean, Sungai Kim, there were toxic pollutions that hit the headlines. So the water pollution incident occurred on March, and it was caused by illegal chemical waste dumping at the river in Pasir Gudang of Johor in Malaysia. Now, these illegal dumping released toxic fumes and affected as many as 6,000 Malaysians and hospitalised close to 3,000. Now, most of these victims were school students. 110 schools were then subsequently closed along the river. I mean, what happened here? Were the environmental controls so lax that these manufacturing plants were allowed to dump without anybody noticing over these years? And it just so happened that this time it was tipped over?
Yeah, and then we've also, in relation to that, I think the water cuts recently were related to essentially people dumping pollution and rubbish into the manholes, that now we have to shut these manholes. We have to put CCTVs. So even on the ground, regular human behavior is not it's not being positive. It's, you can look at it as a top-down approach or a bottom-up approach, but something needs to give.
I mean, it has to be also a function of enforcement and penalty, right? So, you know, I think perpetrators who cause such environmental damage and have repercussions on ordinary lives, they really need to be taken to task and actually, you know, heavy fines or even prison sentences, because it doesn't seem that human beings are other, you know, they're just going to behave themselves unless there is this threat of penalty on them, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the other big environmental-related story, I think, but this is a bit more of a positive one, was in May, Environment Minister Yeo Byi-yin announced that Malaysia will return 3,000 tons of plastic waste to countries including the US, Canada and Saudi Arabia amid a broadening clampdown on imports and improperly labelled rubbish across Southeast Asia. And she also added that Malaysia would return shipments of the contaminated plastic rubbish and non-recyclable or low-quality plastic to avoid dumping of waste in Malaysia from the rest of the world. And this at least is a bit of a mark of something that can be done. It's all rubbish in the day.
That nobody wants, but cleverly dumped on us. So at least now we are aware.
Yeah, we're doing something about it. And it's about enforcement. Now, up next, we'll be taking a look at the Dong Zong meeting tomorrow with the president of ABIM. Analysis from the president of ABIM. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.